they need polish, and they'll say things all around it, like they get down in the weeds or they lose their thought because they in a presentation because they know so much about the subject. Or when they're asked questions during Q&A, they're just not as sharply focused as they need to be.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Diana Boer. Here's three facts I think you should know about Diana. One, she is the author of, hang on, wait for it, 49 books. Yes, you heard me correctly. 49 real books, all published by major U.S. publishers, Penguin, Random House, Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins, and McGraw-Hill. If you know books, you've heard those names. And there are 62 of them in foreign editions. The second fact is she is as a communication consultant and presentation coach, Diana has among her clients more than one-third of the Fortune 500 organizations. Means it's maybe I could go after the other two-thirds. And the third fact is Diana has never bought anything at a Starbucks. And she could be the only person in the country who hasn't done that. Do you know anybody who hasn't bought something from Starbucks? Diana Boer, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you. It's great to be here, George. And just don't tell Starbucks about that last thing.
Yeah, they'll probably pay you back by never hiring you either.
Right. Now, I'm sure they're a great company. It's just I don't drink coffee.
Then there's not much else to buy there. Yes, I'm with you there. Diana, you are 49 books. And one of the books that you wrote is called Creating Personal Presence. I've always wondered what that means, because it's not tangible, is it? And how do you recognize presence? And maybe a longer answer is, how do we build it?
Well, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said it's hard to define. When I've been going around the country speaking on this in the last three decades, I ask audiences, what is personal presence? And they call out somewhere, you know, three or four dozen attributes, you know, skills. Some people focus on traits or characteristics, habits, competences in jobs. So they don't, we don't agree exactly on a definition, you know, a one sentence definition. But most of us know it when we don't see it. We know it when we do see it, when somebody walks in the room and heads turn and everybody looks and says, you know, who is this person that just entered? Because conversation just opens up and people include them and they listen when this person talks. So when I started to hear these same things over and over, you know, when I did this in front of my audiences, I really divided those things into four, what I call buckets. if you will, George, if you'll let me simplify it that much, it's how somebody appears. And I don't mean, you know, their attractiveness necessarily. I mean, the way they could be, their movement, their dress, their handshake, their walk, their gestures, etc. How they look, how they talk, and how they think in a spontaneous moment, you know, when something happens and they're not prepared. It's just how they react and express themselves when they don't have time to think. And then the last bucket, George, I'll call all other. It's character traits, values, their competencies in the job, their reputation, etc.
Four buckets, and I just want to clarify that the four buckets for the listeners again. So bucket one is?
how somebody looks when you first see them, your first impressions.
So first impression, the look. And bucket two is?
How they speak. It could be their sentence patterns, if they stammer, if they have a smooth flow, their word choices. Do they use a lot of slang? Do they curse? Do they have intelligent word choices that are precise? Are they vague? All of that, poor grammar, etc.
And then bucket three?
Is how they think. Do they speak in a logical, organized way? When somebody asks a question, do they answer it well, or do they just fall apart? You know, George, have you ever seen, let me just ask you this, have you ever seen somebody in a presentation and they do great in the formal part of it, and then they get to the Q&A and they just seem like they just fall apart? I mean, you've probably been in a presentation like that.
Might have been me. Yeah, we're obviously, in a case like that, the speaker has memorized the presentation, haven't really thought about the different aspects or how the audience, and their only goal is just to get through it.
Right. But when they get to the Q&A, and that happens so often, sometimes it's not that they don't know their subject, it's that they know so much about their subject. You know, when I'm training lawyers sometimes, or engineers, and when they get to the Q&A and that decision maker asks them questions, it's like they're rolling through a catalog of so much information that they stammer and stutter and get down in the weeds, and they can't give a big picture organized answer. So in that third bucket, as we're summarizing here, it's to be able to quickly synthesize information and express it persuasively, thinking on their feet. That's that third bucket, expressing themselves persuasively and logically, clearly. And then that fourth bucket is the all other. It's the values, their personality traits. It's their competency on their job, their reputation, that kind of thing. Do they have a sense of humor? Are they approachable? That kind of a characteristic.
Now, when you talked about people who have too much information and they have trouble distilling it for others to understand, I think of scientists, and often when scientists are interviewed in the media, they often can't express themselves well because they know too much, and they often aren't able to say, okay, well, here's the three main points, or here's the process, and here's the steps. And right. And because they know so much, and they, and in the scientific process, thinking says, well, there's always doubt. We're never 100%, you know, that's science. And the average person doesn't like those kind of answers.
Right. You know, when you go to an attorney and you ask about this question, here's what happened with my neighbor. Should I or should I not take a chance and go to court with this? And you want them to say, in all my experience with the cases I know about, I don't think you have a chance. Just drop it. Forget it. And then here's why I think that. But what they do is, well, there was this case and blah, blah, blah. And then there's this other case on the one hand. And you walk out and you think, I don't know what you told me to do. I don't know what your opinion is. And I'm paying you for your legal opinion here. You don't want to do that when you're doing a presentation or when you're writing a feasibility study. That CEO is saying, tell me how we can purchase this property. You know, should I structure the financing? And they don't want you to go around the world and give them 16 options. You know, they're paying you to think through the situation and give them your best recommendation and support that.
Diana, when you help rising stars, executives or potential executives improve their executive presence, when the company comes to you and say, Diana, help this person, they probably don't use the words executive presence. They probably say something else. And what do you usually hear?
You're right, George. I'm glad you said that. They don't usually use that term when they're giving a performance appraisal. Walk down the hall and say something like, Mike, you need more executive presence, or Suzanne, your executive presence needs to be improved before I can promote you into the executive suite. And let me just ask you, I know you've done a lot of consulting in this area. What kind of comments have you heard executives when they complain about someone needing to get to the next level? What comments come to your mind?
I'm glad you asked that, Diana, because often they say, well, you know, they're bright. They know their material, but when they speak, we can't understand them. They just miss the point. They leave us confused. I think they just need help to polish their communication skills.
I'm glad you used that word. That's the most frequent word that they'll say. They just need polished. It's not that they don't think these people are bright. In fact, they frequently say, this guy is just brilliant, or this woman is so sharp. And they use that word polished rather than executive presence. So if you're a rising star, don't wait for your executive to say, you need executive presence. Go out and buy a book on executive presence, or go out and get coaching on executive presence. They're not going to say that. But what the comments I hear, as you just mentioned, they need polish, and they'll say things all around it, like they get down in the weeds, or they lose their thought because they in a presentation because they know so much about the subject, or when they're asked questions during Q&A, they're just not as sharply focused as they need to be, or they don't know how to reshape their presentation for different audiences. Or they'll say things like, they need to adjust their language for the people they're talking to. Or they'll say, I've even heard this many times, they don't know how to dress appropriately for different occasions. Now, at first I thought, now that's a minor issue, but I've heard executives say things like, this woman showed up for a board meeting in a printed dress, rather than saying, you know, this was an elegant affair, she should have worn a solid color. I've heard an executive talk about how the man's tie was not tied appropriately. These are things that when you get to the very top of an organization, they expect you to do a great presentation. They expect you to know how to do small talk. It's these very little things that make the difference in the junior vice president and the executive vice president. And so those are things that most people would not know how to put a label on and call part of executive presence, but that's all of part of that first appearance. Now, I'm not saying that that's the most important. You know, when I ticked off those four buckets, let me just point out here, George, that first impression is the least important of all of these. But it's third of the gateway. It's the first thing you notice. The most important is that fourth one, you know, your values and your competence. But it's the one you have to be around someone longer to know, to dig deeper. And like honesty and integrity and all of those really important things. But if you don't get past the gateway, the appearance, how you speak, the language barrier, the ability to express what you've been doing persuasively and logically explaining it, then you never get to spend time with that person to let them know the other things, understand about your integrity and trust and confidence, et cetera.
Now, that fourth bucket being the most important one, you mentioned values, honesty, integrity. I'm guessing that those are qualities that can't necessarily be coached. They need to be there, don't they?
Absolutely, George. I am glad that you pointed that out, because I always say that when I'm speaking in front of a group. I said, I've got 90 minutes with you, or 3 hours, whatever the time is going to be. I can teach you the first three. I can bring people up on the stage. I can demonstrate the before and after. I can teach you those. But that last one, that's developed over years and years, what somebody values and how you connect with other people, how you develop that connection and that approachableness. And no, that's exactly right. You can't just teach someone that. You can teach them some skills that make that more evident. For example, people might say, really, I'm not an arrogant person. I may come across that way, but I really feel even shy inside. Now, I can teach you some skills to help people understand that you're humble, that you are approachable, that you want to get to know them. But there are things in the first three buckets that are very quickly learned. That, for example, if you're stiff and I say, you come across in an arrogant way. Sometimes it's the fact that when you present, you speak and you have choppy gestures. And I can say, look, if you would just cup your hands a little bit when you gesture, that makes you seem less arrogant. And people go, what do you mean by that? And see, that's a little thing to correct in your appearance that would change somebody's attitude or their perception of you being arrogant. But to actually change that, if that is really your characteristic of arrogance, of course, I'm not going to change that in 2 hours or 3 hours of training. That's something that you've developed over a lifetime, and it's an attitude change.
And so this, how they come across, how they present, that can be coached, that can be trained. Those are skills. And I think of, you talk about arrogance, and how about the gesture where someone is talking with their finger pointing at you like this.
great demo, George. Just that pointed finger makes a big difference. But here's something else. Most people don't know why they're perceived in a certain way. A lot of times, let me give you an example of that. I had a guy, this was a coach session I was doing on presentations at IBM. And I have them, doing feedback on each other. I've built a positive environment, so they're welcoming feedback. But this one guy who happened to be an instructor there, and he was in my session, and he was polished. I mean, he was great. Delivery-wise, his gesturing, his movement, except on the feedback, he would get very negative comments, when I would say you need to improve something. And it seemed like nobody associated with him at break or at lunch. And he was very upset about it. And he opened up to me in our one-on-one sessions. And he says, I don't know why people seem to just not like me. And I said, let's try a little experiment. I don't remember what his name is. I'll call him Jack. And I said, all right, let's try something, Jack. Your delivery is perfect. You are just a master presenter. But when you go back in there, I want you to mispronounce a word. I want you to stumble like you can't think of a word. I want you to say, what's the word? And ask the audience, just lean your hand forward and say, well, what's the word? And let them help you with the word. And he did that. And he did that a couple of times in the next presentation. And the whole attitude changed. He got more positive comments on his presentation. He got a warmer feel from the group. And he came back to me in his next one-on-one feedback. And he says, I don't understand it. But people commented much more positively in my presentation. And I goofed up. And I said, what do you mean? He said, but I was missing a word. I acted like I had them to tell me what the word was. I don't get it. And I explained it. People can't identify with someone who's perfect. They can't identify with a perfect person. And just by that little thing and his seeming more human, more approachable, made the total difference. So that's what I mean, George, about being coached with specific things to change a perception of somebody. Now, we're not changing his attitude. He may still be arrogant. But whatever the perception is that you're trying to change, that can be coached.
And in that case, it's what I think it's worth pointing out that it's not, the goal isn't to be perfect in how we present ourselves. It's not to have you comb your hair, but not every single hair has to be in place or just stumbling on a word, how that makes people feel.
Yes. I'm glad you point that out, George. What I try to tell them is I'm not going to change your behavior. I want you to be your best self. Whatever your best self is, we need to strengthen that. And I don't work on people's weaknesses so much unless it bothers them. I want whatever your natural ability is. If it's humor and wisecracking, we want to make those things pay off. I'm not going to coach you to be a wisecracker. Just figure out what your skills are, what your traits are, and be great at that. And then if your culture and your organization is to get to the point in a presentation, which it should be in most organizations, you're going to start with that overview immediately. And so there are some things that about structure in a presentation, about how you present yourself, about the kind of subjects that you bring up when you small talk and things that you shouldn't bring up. I'm going to pass those along, sure. But all of that constitutes someone's executive presence, and it affects their influence on other people, just their overall influence.
Now, when it comes to personal presence and influence, do you think the personality style of the person has an influence? You know, the various personality tests, you know, some of them, and you know, some of them say there's the analytical, the driver, the sociable, these different types. Do you think one of those types has an advantage with presence, or can all those various types?
I don't. I think they all, that is such a perceptive question, George. I really love the fact that you asked that. And I've been asked that before. I think they all can be very effective. And most people think, if you were asked the general population, most people would think, oh, little gregarious, that outgoing personality, and they call different things with different personality tests, that's the person that's most effective. Not necessarily. I tell people, think of it like this. And usually that person's in sales. That person's very gregarious. You know, they get up there, they can think of witty remarks right off the cuff. They interact with the audience very easily. They may do that, and they may create a very valuable or fun, let me not say valuable, but fun interaction and spirit, and never are they persuasive. They may miss the point of the presentation. People may walk out of their audience and say, boy, that was fun. That was great. But what did he say? But what did she say? But what was the point? What are we supposed to do? We've all been in meetings like that. We've been in classes like that back in the school days and thought, but I don't remember the thing they said, and laughed our heads off and thought it was great. But that's not necessarily the measure of value. That's not necessarily the measure of effectiveness. In fact, those people who've given those presentations have walked out and not got the contract. So that's not necessarily the measure of success, or certainly not my measure of success. And it's certainly, I would tell you, not the leadership team's measure of success.
Now, Diana, let's look at, we've been talking about a rising star, but let's look at an established executive who probably has some level of presence already, but what if there was one or two or three things they could do to create even stronger presence, stronger influence? What might they do?
Well, one thing they can do is listen. Most of them don't listen enough. They're used to giving out information, but genuinely listening. And I would say one thing they have to do among their peers to stand out, that's with their group, you know, with their team. But one thing that I think they have to do to stand out is to publish a book. In our day and age, you know, the mandate that we've had forever in the academic world is to publish or perish. I think that mandate has moved into corporate America. I mean, anybody can get on Google and ask a list of executives who've published a book. And I don't mean self-publishing, because anybody can self-publish a book, and many have to just, you know, walk down to the printer. We've got technology to do that. Anybody can go to a printer and do that and sell it to their own employees. But I mean, establish themselves by unique thinking and their management style and their leadership tips, and how they've turned around an organization, how they do teamwork, how they've built a culture that's unique. I think that gives them influence in their industry, worldwide influence sometimes.
And if that is critical, what do you think stops them or prevents them from doing that?
I think sometimes they wait too long. Many of them think, I'm so busy running my company, my organization, that I'm in my second stage of life, and they wait till they retire, and then they sort of lose their momentum, and they lose, you know, part of their staff who could help them. But I think really when they're younger and they get the idea, many of them have the idea, you know, I've helped some executives do that early in life, they think it's going to take too long. You know, they're busy every day, you know, they work there. Sometimes their driver picks them up at 6:30 or 7 in the morning, and they're still at the office at 7. They think, writing a book is going to take 2 years. actually it takes very little of their time, because many of them just dictate their thoughts. And then they have a writer that goes away and does it, brings it back to them and says, read this and edit and change. And so it does not take that much of their time. They just think it does. And that's the way many consultants out there, many professional speakers, they know it can help their career, but they procrastinate because they think, gee, I can't afford to take 6 months or a year of my time to do that. When if they had a system, it would only take a couple of weeks. Even if they wrote it themselves, they could write the book in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Now I'm not talking about research, because executives, many times they've spent 5 years building the expertise to turn around that organization, or built the expertise to lead an organization. But to actually draft it, they could turn it out in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I've done it, as you mentioned at the beginning. I know how long it really just takes.
Now, Diana, for those who want to have that system working for them, I believe there's two ways you can help them. They could work directly with you for direct coaching on the book, or you've got a program available where they can learn about that system. Please tell us about that program.
Yes. I two or three times a year, I do Boer Book Camp. Boer, like my last name, Boher, B-O-H-E-R. And I teach people that system to write it and, you know, coach them through it, put them in touch with a literary agent to help them put together a proposal to sell it to a major publisher, get an agent and sell it to a major publisher. Or occasionally, if I'm really interested in the topic, I will help them write it.
Mm. And for those who might want to check that out, the website there is Boer, and Boo like Boo, you know, a ghost, B-O-O-H-E-R bookcamp.com. And the link, you'll find the link in the description to this podcast as well. Diana, if you were at a, say you were at a networking event, you know, post-pandemic, we're at a networking event and an executive is talking to you and say, I'm interested in what you do. I've got a employee who looks brilliant and really needs help. But if there was one or two or three ideas that you could give that person so they could go back to the office and tell the rising star, what one or two, three tips to get them started in the right direction, what would that be?
Well, if it were on answering questions, I would say learn to organize your ideas. And I present a format for doing that. And that is summarize up front, then elaborate, then give a concrete example, and then restate. I call it the SEER format, for thinking on your feet. That would be the most important thing they could probably do, because that's the key thing that executives complain about the most. They fall apart in Q&A. When I see them in the hall, they cannot answer my question. So summarize, elaborate, give a concrete example, and restate. And then I would say maybe the second tip would be to be specific. And I know that's simple, but it's not easy. It is, it's a simplified answer, but it is not easy to do. Many people give general, vague answers. And you have to be specific and script the action somebody should take. And that is whether you're writing or whether you're asking for a response orally. When people walk out of a meeting, you're facilitating the meeting, you have to say, so here's what I'd like for you to do. You don't want to just give the general, so you follow me? And people are going to say yes. So you need to say specifically what they're to do. When you're writing, you don't just dump information. You say, so what I'm asking you to do is, and be very specific, whether it's a meeting, writing, doing a presentation, it always needs to have an action statement.
My guest today is Diana Boer, reminding you to publish or perish to increase your influence.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.